Live.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
Andy Live.
Right, we have in the studio, Emma. Just check your mic, Emma, just speak in, say 11:12.
11:12?
Perfect, we can hear you. Right, we've got you in from CND Scotland. Do you want to tell us a wee bit about CND Scotland and what you're up to these days?
So my name's Emma Coburn, as introduced. I'm campaign worker at Scottish Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. We work to abolish nuclear weapons in Scotland, and also work with our partners at CND UK for a UK-wide abolition of Trident, and we're also part of the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons.
Right. So let's get something from the start. You're not a branch office of CND, you're an autonomous group yourself.
Yeah, so we work autonomously in Scotland. We are part of the CND UK, as in we're partners with them, but not a branch in the way that Scottish CND has branches in Aberdeen and District, gotcha. Edinburgh, Glasgow.
Right. And what's the membership now? Have you got any figures to hand? Is it quite healthy, do you think, or could you always do more?
So post-referendum, obviously we had a real jump in membership, which was fantastic. Mm. A lot of people became awake to the issue of nuclear weapons in Scotland. Mm. A lot of people got more involved politically. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, as an annual membership, membership numbers have decreased. We're currently sitting at about 3,000, which I know can definitely be increased. Memberships start from just 10 pence a year, so it's not an awful lot of money at all compared to the amount of work that we do.
Indeed. And you're self-funded as well, aren't you?
Yeah, so we rely mostly on our membership funds and also legacies that our members leave us.
Legacies.
We have, I'm not sure if we're going to talk about it later, but we have Peace Education Scotland, that is our charity arm, with the charitable status that has.
Yeah,
that
we'll try and punt CND Scotland as much as we can. This is what we're all about here. Right, of course, everybody knows about Trident, but do we really know enough about Trident? Scotland as a whole?
So my sort of experience at Scottish CND is that I was a volunteer for about 5 years before I started working in the office. And through that, I mean, I only heard about the issue of nuclear weapons with the independence referendum. It was always sort of in my mind, but as I speak to people, especially people my age, I mean, I'm one of the youngest people in the organisation in terms of how we're made up, and people have just, it's the status quo, it's just the norm, people don't think there's anything we can do about it, it's such a massive issue. And in nuclear weapon states, it is just regarded as, that's just what we have, there's no way we can change it, this is how it's always been.
Yeah, do you think the media has got is lacking in this, highlighting what's going on there, or is it just not good enough news for them, I think?
I think it just comes back to what I said, in that unless something very dramatic happens, such as the recent celebration of nuclear weapons at Westminster, it's not worth...
Yeah, we'll have a look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have a look at that. Right, we'll get straight to it, actually. Westminster Abbey had a church service praising nuclear weapons. I would guess the Scottish Church is really opposed to that, because they are opposed to nuclear weapons. They've come out and said that.
Yeah, so that has been a stance of the Church of Scotland for... I don't have the
figure
on
top of
my head, but for the longest time, members of Church of Scotland helped found Scottish CND. It's a very strong stance that Church of Scotland have always taken. And I believe, and don't quote me on this, but most recently, Church of England have also taken a similar stance. And that is something that our friends at Christian CND were really pushing in the opposition to this. They had a fantastic petition. They had so many... not clued up on the sort of structure of the church, but they had a lot of sort of senior figures in the church sign up in opposition to this, and for that to happen in a Christian church, that's a massive issue, and that is why that did gain a little bit of coverage. And with our friends at CND UK, they staged a fantastic protest to this on the day. And from Scottish CND perspective, we were just supporting that and pulling that information out to our members and things like that.
I am a member of the Church of Scotland, and I know fine that a lot of ministers see it as unchristian, this weapon of mass destruction. And all the time we're reminded in churches and beyond the Second World War, the nuclear weapons in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking more than that down the Holy Loch, aren't we? Uh-huh. It's scandalous what we don't know, and that's deliberate, I guess. How much of a battle do you find getting your message out there?
I think it's the case that we need more people to be involved so we can reach more people, mm-hmm. because I, in all my time of doing this, have yet to meet someone that when I explain the facts and when I talk about how little control Scotland actually has about things that are happening in our country,
mm-hmm.
they almost always support what we're saying, and anyone that comes with the ideas that they are fully supportive of nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. by the time you've had 5-10 minutes with them, they either aren't sure about their opinion or are actively against.
Yeah, indeed. It's one of those things that people have always got something much more important, like family or
uh-huh.
mortgage, to worry about.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's family mortgage that is causing you that worry. It's because of Trident, because it's soaking up all the money that's available.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And also, it's damaging our health. We're getting, just to let you know, we'll be phoning Navy Not Nukes just after the 12 o'clock news. And they've got some stories to tell about what they've seen down in the Holy Loch. I'm sure you've got the same kind of stories, the dangers around nuclear.
So in terms of how Scotland has been exposed over the last 60 years, just actually this year we launched an exhibition with funding from the Heritage Lottery Fund on 60 years of Scottish C&D titled Scotland, A Piece of History.
Uh-huh.
So with that, what we're doing is we're looking at the peace movement in Scotland, the work that they've done, the way that, in actual fact, Scottish C&D has facilitated groups coming together. It's very much a coalition builder, and we wouldn't be as far as we are now without the work of our partner groups such as Trident Ploughshares, Nuke Watch, and all the other groups that are part.
We'll kind of get to that a wee bit later. Also, I want to talk about Hunterston. And also, it's 30-odd years since Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
You probably wouldn't remember that, but... The legacy still goes on. Even farms up in Scotland, there's still sheep being affected by radiation.
Uh-huh.
But we do know, we're going to go to some music just now. This is one you requested. This is China Girl, David Bowie, playing for Emma. We'll be back after this. That was David Bowie, China Girl, as requested by Emma from Scottish C&D, who's sitting opposite me. We're going to be talking a wee bit more about Scottish C&D. In particular, Emma, the ICAN, International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. What's that all about?
So ICAN is an organisation made up of peace groups from across the whole world. Scotland has 4 or 5 partners, so that's broken up into mm-hmm. ICAN in Scotland. We have the Scottish ICAN Roundtable that meets every 3 to 4 months, and what that is it's groups from, for example, Peace and Justice Centre, UN House, Scottish C&D, and we come together and we talk about how we can work together to push the idea of ICAN and the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which is uh-huh. what the work that ICAN does. So the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons was a piece of legislation that was discussed in the UN and brought in...
Oh, right, UN...
Yeah, so we're on a UN level at this point.
Wow.
So what that is it's a treaty, it's one of the most sort of progressive treaties, mm-hmm. treaties in terms of nuclear disarmament, and it's absolute in its opposition. So what we need for that to come into force mm-hmm. is 50 countries to sign and ratify. The signature is the leader of the country signing up to it, and the ratification is when it goes through each state member's parliament and comes into force.
So if there's 50 countries wanted for this UN legislation to uh-huh. be passed, how many have we got so far?
So initially, when the debate was up, there was 122 countries in support of it. The exact figure, last time I looked, it was 22 countries had signed and ratified it, and there's about 70 countries that have signed it. So...
Halfway.
That's
not bad.
It's a really fast-moving treaty for the UN level. And I think at the last ICAN in the UK meeting, which was down in York that I attended last month, we were sitting at looking at end of 2020 for that to come into force.
Wow. Good work. This is unseen work that Scottish C&D does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think more people should know about this, definitely. The one thing that I got a bit confused about was your website is www.banthebomb.org.
So that's the Scottish C&D website. We also help to host nuclearban.scot, which is iCanon Scotland, that's the website where all the partner organisations come together to talk about global news and the work that we're doing to help support the Treaty and the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons.
Brilliant. 60th anniversary, Atomic Scotland. 60 years there's been a Scotland C&D.
That's right.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Well, 61 now, we had a 61st birthday party at the end of March, where we held, as I mentioned earlier, Scotland, A Piece of History, so that's an exhibition. It's a timeline, it's a 4 metre long timeline by 2 metres tall, with all of the main events within Scotland and out with, that have moved on to progress.
And that's on your website?
Yeah, so you can get onto that through bandthebomb.org. You can go on bandthebomb.org/history. You can see an online version of that. Other than that, it is touring around Scotland. We've been all across the Central Belt so far. We're looking to go into the Highlands at the end of the year. If you're based in the Central Belt, the next place you can see it is at Hillhead Library in Glasgow as part of the West End Festival on the 15th of June. We'll be there all day. Forward to that, we'll also be in Arran at the start of June, the Isle of Arran.
Wow.
We'll be part of the World Justice Festival in Edinburgh, and we'll be at Secret Bunker. The whole calendar's up there.
That is amazing.
Getting around.
What we'll do for you, Emma, we will get all these dates and we will put them on the show, and we'll promote them all the time as they come through. This is amazing work. And I think, 60 years, you said?
Yeah.
The thing about... even CND meetings, you do see these, I'll call them, let's see, older people.
Uh-huh.
They must have been the people that start from the 60s, uh-huh. 60 years, yes. So they go way back.
Uh-huh. So this is, it sort of brings back to what I was saying, and people my age and people a little bit older, we see nuclear weapons as something that's always been there. There's not really been any massive changes, whereas... Mm. The people that I meet in meetings, the people, for example, our vice chairs that have been around since the start, they were there very much when there was Polaris and then moving on to Trident. And so there was a real reason for people to have a lot of anger around it. Whereas now, like I said before, it's just the status quo. We've come to accept it. We think it's totally out of our hands. The whole language around nuclear weapons is completely inaccessible. We use words like deterrent. I mean, what does that even mean?
That's something you put down your sinks to stop germs, isn't it? That's
exactly.
It.
So I think we talk about it in a little bit. We have the campaign Scotland Not Trident that we're running this year, where what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the language around nuclear weapons and sort of make it more accessible, make the main arguments, link it into things that people...
understand
more. People understand, and the issues that people face day to day, such as housing and jobs and things like that.
One of the things that came out of the 2014 referendum was the comparison of spend to Trident and nuclear in general to actual social housing, social programmes, and it's vast.
Yeah,
and
it's outrageous.
And we don't, what do we see for what we get, what we pay? Well, there is there was a survey done not so long ago, you probably won't like this, but most of the people said that they were glad... Mm-hmm. of Trident because it's kept us safe.
Yeah.
How do you combat that narrative?
With that sort of line of communication, that's one that's just been pushed out by proponents of Trident. It is something like I said before, we tried to break it down into the simplest terms because that's how people can communicate it to others.
Exactly.
That's how our message is spread. We speak to people, they speak to people. Even something as simple as sharing something on social media, something that gets people thinking, and that's sort of where we've been focusing with the Scotland Not Trident campaign. We've been focusing a lot on social media because we know, especially since the referendum, that is a real important form of communication.
Well, do you know this? My daughter, who is 11, I try to tell her about these things, and as soon as I do, small girl, big brain, sponge brain, she goes, "Dad, that's just terrible. Mm-hmm. How is that allowed to happen?"
Mm-hmm.
I says, "Well, if I was to tell you all the things you didn't know, you would know about them, and then it would happen without you knowing."
Yeah.
And she says, "Is that what happens, Dad? How can we stop that?" Yeah. And my immediate thought was, I wonder if it... Are you too political to go into schools?
So we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have Peace Education Scotland. It started as Scottish CND Education. That was a committee within Scottish CND, but it's now branched out into its own organisation in terms of a charity. We have charitable status with that. And the main reason that we have Peace Education Scotland is to get into schools, to go out there, speak to young people, teach them of, try to change this narrative around it being the status quo. And, you know, you're better to contact people when they're younger and communicate with them about that before they grow up and they think they can't do anything about it.
Now, it's a bit controversial, but is there, I take it you don't scare people, you don't frighten them about the
Not at all. So we have, at the moment, we have three modules. We have one named Survivor Stories, which we'd aim towards people at the later stages of school who are a bit more aware, and usually we'll put them through the other two modules before that. We're currently creating a module on environment, because obviously that's so important to young people.
Indeed.
We have the fantastic school strikes that are going on, so we are creating an environment and a module about that, but most of the schools that we get in contact with, they maybe don't have the class time to break it up into taking each of the four modules, so what we've been doing is we've been creating a sort of mega module that takes 2 hours out of the day, but it has been coming across really well, starting with an introduction, going into the dangers, going into the history of it, speaking about pressure groups, all things that are like go in line with what kids are being taught in school.
And do you refer back to Hiroshima and those kind of things?
Yes, so that is what the Survivor Stories module is all about. So we have video testimonies from Hibakusha, we have sort of worksheets going through like the stages of radiation. So it's very much teaching the kids, and we do it from a non-political perspective.
Brilliant. Because I think that's the biggest worry of schools, if it's coming in from a political thing, you know, and if you start saying, well, the only way we can get Trident's through, rid of it, is through independence, which is probably true, but you can't really mention that, because that's political. Right, lots and lots in there. I'll just put the number again. If you get any messages you want to get in touch, 07507 248 856. Nuclear. We know there's a lot of you out there. Have you given up or relinquished your membership to CND? Why? Why have you done that? Is it just because it's like giving blood, I guess, you've done it and you've forgotten all about it? It's now the time to get back into campaign mode. Give us your shouts on that and we'll get back to you. Woof! Right, so what are you up to today?
So I'm here today. I was in the office this morning. We're just launching our new online store. That's another way we sort of raise funds. So we've got a whole load of t-shirts in. We'll be at festivals all summer, so we're organising that.
I seen you at the March and Rally at Glasgow Green, and I thought, I'll go over and speak to you. And I couldn't believe the amount of information I got from a 5-minute chat. So then I decided, look, can you come in? And I can't believe after, it's even shorter than that, you've given us all this even more information. So thanks very much, Emma, for coming in. Stick around, because we've got to play some music now. This is something that Mike Fenwick asked when he was on Across the Seat from me on Monday. He asked for Buffy St. Marie, The Big One's Got Away. I'm going to try and see what this is about. Right, we've got Emma back. Emma, we were just discussing how you got to where you are. You're an integral part of Scotland CND, but I was asking, were your parents CND? And you said to me something quite remarkable.
So we were just having a discussion around that. And people often ask me that, because a lot of people that I meet in Scottish CND and with other organisations, it's very much, my father was at this protest, my mum was doing that, when in actual fact I come from quite an opposite background. Few members of my close family are involved in the military, are very much pro-Trident, sort of not disagree with what I do, they think that I can, but like a lot of sort of military personnel that I've come in contact with, it's sort of like, you go and do your campaigning, you go and do this, it's not really going to do anything, there's not going to be much change
in it. So you're not a danger, you're not a threat to anyone.
Yeah, that's sort of how people, you know, just like that whole hippie mentality.
How wrong they are. it's just like, maybe my preconception was, you're bound to have parents that wear sandals and a caftan, but it's not the case, is it?
No.
A lot of ordinary people are coming forward, getting more and more interested in these issues. One issue that I got really annoyed about and really worried about was the Hunterston, it's nuclear, but it's not nuclear bombs, but nuclear power, so it's nuclear. I'm just wanting to know what your thoughts are, because Hunterston B, my second name's Hunter, and that's my ancestral homeland, and I've got that blooming thing up there. But what, I think it was Dr. Ian, who was it?
Ian Fairley.
He'd done a piece on this, and he realised that the bricks were cracking within the terminal. It was due to be decommissioned 2011, and it's still there with bricks cracking. How much danger has to happen before we really wake up to this?
So as far, from my experience anyway, Scottish C&D, we didn't do an awful lot of work around nuclear power because obviously we had such a large focus with Faslane just being 30 miles up the road from Glasgow.
Yeah, but, I know, I just landed that on you. But it does give concerns, doesn't it?
Definitely. I think this year we've sort of focused more on the issues at Hunterston because, well, first of all, we have a very active Ayrshire C&D branch.
Ooh,
so something that really affects their community.
Indeed.
Also, the dangers around that, as you said, it was due to be closed in 2011, but then it had been pushed back. And we got in contact with Dr. Ian Fairley, and at the start of the year, February, March, we held some really interesting discussions in Glasgow and Edinburgh around the dangers of nuclear power and specifically what it is that's happening at Hunterston. So myself, I went in with hardly any knowledge of how nuclear power works, how the power plants work, and came away with a very easy sort of breakdown of how they work. You can see a sort of summary of that on our website if anyone's really interested.
Indeed. What gets me, Emma, is that we're pushing ahead with renewable power up the east coast of Scotland and it's rumoured, I don't know if the facts are this for sure, but we can really get all our energy needs from non-nuclear, renewable energy.
Well, yeah.
Why are we still dabbling in this ancient system?
Well, that's exactly it, especially when you see the fears. I mean, Dr. Ian Fairley, he has produced multiple papers on what could happen at Hunterston, and the dangers that would pose, especially to the central belt of Scotland and further. EDF are obviously still pushing to reopen. I think they set the initial restart date end of April, pushed it back to end of May. The Office for Nuclear Regulation, they will not let them reopen unless they deem it safe. But from the work that Dr. Ian Fairley did, they monitored about 10% of the 3,000 graphite barrels that are in there.
Right.
And from that, I can't remember the number, I think something like 40% of them had the major cracking. So if you scale that up to 100% of it, you're looking at a massive, massive issue there.
Well, Hunterston B cracks in the graphite bricks was pretty serious. Even more serious was that 28%, only 28% of the fuel channels had been inspected by cameras, because that's the only way you safely can do it. What about the rest? We don't know.
Exactly. The discussion that
it could be in excess of about 1,000 bricks cracked.
I think from what I remember, there are 3,000 graphite barrels and potentially 1,200 of those may have severe cracks in them.
Indeed.
But with the severe radiation that's going on in there, they can't put the cameras into every section, and also that means they need to close that area for working. So
absolutely,
that's a very simple version of the work that Dr. Ian Fairley had done.
And the more you speak to people, the more frightened to get. Do you think it's suddenly coming upon them that, oh, wow? Because I can tell you one thing. My wife is she's not well with cancer, and we go to the Beatson Clinic in Glasgow.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But the thing is, a lot of people, even the doctors, saying leukemia, the clusters are coming from Ayrshire and certain parts of Scotland where nuclear isn't that far away. If that isn't a wake-up call to people, I don't know what is.
Well, that's exactly it. And I think in terms of, I mean, I was just discussing it with yourself, the new HBO show of Chernobyl, that has really sort of reminded people about the fears around nuclear power. And obviously the situation aren't similar, but people need to be aware that actually nuclear power isn't as safe as people make it out to be. And I think, as you said, 30 years ago, that's before I was born. It's before a lot of the young people that are around today were born. So it's sort of not fresh in our minds. But in actual fact, there's still remnants of that in Scotland and across Europe.
Absolutely. And you know what makes it even more galling? There's MPs who come out of, who lose their seats, join up with the nuclear boards and get paid positions, and they go on radio and they tell how good nuclear is and we need a mixed balance of energies. No, we don't.
Yeah.
We're not that daft, you know. And, you know, for the young people coming through, I mean, when you've got a daughter 11 years old, you do not want her to grow up in a country where nuclear is dominant. We've had it for so long. If that thing goes up, the whole of Glasgow goes up. The argument that comes back to me from that is, well, nothing's happened in 60-odd years. But wait a minute here. There's leukemia clusters. There's we can't... I go subaqueous sometimes. Kind of go down the Holy Loch. A beautiful place in Scotland. You cannot use that as a leisure facility. Boats patrolling it, make sure you don't get down there. I don't know, Navy for Navy Against Nukes might tell us the health implications that they found. And even, you know, even if we could put warning signs up to tell people not to go there because it's nuclear, they won't even let us do that.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think that's a lot of the work that Faslane Peace Camp's obviously done over the last 30 years and things about in that area.
Absolutely. Right, we're going to go to some music now. Kev's instructed me there's plenty of messages coming through, so we'll have a look at them. But this is Charlie Puth. He's telling us to Marvin Gaye and Get It On or something. Let's see. And it's got a point now. Marvin Gaye, Get It On, Charlie Puth. We've got the mics on, Emma, so you're coming out loud and clear. Hope you enjoyed that wee bit of music. Meghan Trainor was on that too. Right, what's coming up in the up-and-coming future for Scotland CND? Or is it CND Scotland?
Scottish CND.
Scottish CND. Yeah. Got it wrong twice. Well, no, I got banthebomb.org wrong as well, and I wasn't wrong. Right, this is your chance to promote Scottish CND.
So in terms of the events that come up, you can obviously find them always on our website, which is banthebomb.org, definitely. So there, today, between 4 and 5, there is the weekly vigil at Faslane, which is organised by Helensburgh CND, Faslane Peace Camp and Trident Ploughshares. That's on every single week. We need to be there every single week to speak to the people that are leaving the base. That has been going ongoing for decades now.
60-odd years, I think. It has, I think it has. It's been there since inception. Yeah.
And we wouldn't be able to do that without the help of those groups.
No, you wouldn't.
We also have, as I mentioned before, we've got Scotland A Piece of History that will be touring around Scotland. If you're interested in taking it on, it is a 4-metre by 2-metre timeline, and we can help transport it to your area. If you think there's a school, public library, local area that would benefit from it, we can help you facilitate that. We also have our monthly street stall and peace vigil. So that's at the Donald Dewar statue in Glasgow.
Oh, right,
we do
the steps.
On the fourth Thursday of every month. We have a street stall between 3:30.
I see my daughter there, actually.
Yeah, so when we just do the outreach for that, this month we'll be looking at the Jobs Not Trident campaign, where we'll be talking about our work with the SDUC and things like that. And then after that, there is a peace vigil organised by the Scottish Peace Network, which we participate in also. Following that, we have Scotland A Piece of History going to the Saulcourts Library. I believe that will be on the 29th of May.
You've got a full calendar.
Yeah, and then we're going to Arran with the exhibition, and then Edinburgh CND are going to be at the Meadows Festival, following us at Eden Festival with our stall to reach young people, families and people that attend them.
And it's just outside the Scottish Parliament as well.
Yeah.
So you might be able to attract some politicians over.
Well, that's
the plan, I'm sure.
That's the plan.
Just when you mentioned there, the other thing that comes up from certain Labour politicians is the jobs that nuclear brings. There's so many. Can you dispel that or prove it or disprove it?
I was lucky enough to get along to the SDUC Congress where we had a stall this year. Our chair, Arthur West, he had put forward motion around defence diversification, which SDUC welcomed a few years ago, I think, now, but this was a sort of reaffirming their support for that, to work with the Scottish Government on that. So we released the leaflet and the online sort of campaign around the jobs. We sort of dispel the myths around, I think the MOD at the moment are hitting out with 30,000 jobs, when in actual fact the majority of those are military personnel that can easily be deployed elsewhere.
That's right.
And in terms of that, we look at the Faslane Coolport areas and how that area can be developed for marine tourism. In the case of Scotland, we have a Scottish naval base there for conventional arms and things like that. We have a few reports out on that we worked with the SDUC. We've just had a reprint of them, so if anyone wants any of them, you can get them on our website, Trident Not Jobs.
I will.
We also connect up with the Jimmy Reid Foundation, who released a report on defence diversification. The Nuclear Education Trust, who are one of our partner organisations, they have a fantastic report out of the same title. All of these reports you can get on our website. They're really worth a look. I've spent the last 6 months reading through all the reports of the last 10 years just to see how the jobs argument has changed and moved forward. And
well, I can tell you, Emma, for this interview, I scanned over the last 2 days your website, and I couldn't get it on, honestly, for an interview. I had to get the salient points. It's just chock full of good stuff. You must visit bandthebomb.org. It's honestly, it's awakening. It really is, especially when they talk about jobs and this diversification from nuclear. We can change things over into not from nuclear to renewable energy easily. And it seems to me that it's I don't know. It's politicians like to use nuclear to flex their muscles and say to the rest of the world, "We've got nukes."
Well, exactly. I think the jobs argument as well. It's something that really hits home with people. So if they're being told, if we don't have nuclear weapons, that's 30,000 jobs, 30,000 people without employment, obviously that's something that really like goes to the heart, whereas that's, we're trying to make it really easy to understand that actually that's not the case, they're just framing it differently. This is how many jobs may be lost, but they won't really be lost because of, with the use of a defence diversification agency,
that's
we'll be able to re-employ those people in more what we title socially useful jobs.
I know, it's like pushing a big boulder up a hill trying to convince people of this.
And that's why we're still here 60 years later.
Indeed, and doing a fantastic job. Well, all I can say now, it's coming up to the 12 o'clock news, we've got 5 minutes left. I'll put in a wee bit of track, but just a big thanks, Emma, for coming in.
It's been so insightful.
Oh, no, and you can come back again anytime you want. Whenever you've got a big story to come in, just give us a shout. We'll put you in a seat and we'll get an interview going and we'll try and get the music you really wanted, not the stuff we put on. I'm going to put on, this is Kenneth, this will take us up to the news, I hope, and we'll just say cheerio to Emma from Scottish ND, and we thank her very much. Here we go.
EndedLife.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
EndedLife.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
EndedLife.radio.
Right, welcome back to Indie Live Radio and me, Norrie Hunter. Now it's time to get on the phones. We have to phone Ailsa. Ailsa, hope she's listening to get this this phone call. Just get myself together. Scroll down, where is she? Ailsa, right, gonna phone her. See if we get a reply. See if she's in. Oh, it's ringing.
Hello?
Hello, is that Ailsa?
Yes, it is. Is that Norrie?
This is Norrie from Indie Live Radio. You're going live, Ailsa. I'm not trying to scare you or anything, but we've got you on live to probably over 1,000 listeners. Don't worry about that. Right, first question, Ailsa. I know you've not got much time. What's the reason for NNN? That's nuclear, not, or Navy, not nuclear.
Navy, not nuclear. Right, okay, so essentially it's round our way, it's quite heavily no voters, okay? So Argyll and Bute actually voted about 59% no in the IndyRef.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the major players is the fact that the base is right on our doorstep. So there's a lot of people that were concerned about the likes of the was that about 11,000 jobs or something were going to go?
Yeah, we just talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a kind of big one. So what we're trying to say is, if you get rid of nuclear weapons, if Scotland becomes independent and you get rid of nuclear weapons, you do not need to lose all those jobs, because by turning it into a conventional defence force and having a normal Navy base there, you're still going to need all your support staff. So all those jobs will not go.
So they're transferable jobs, Ailsa?
Sorry?
They're transferable jobs.
That's yes,
what, yeah, yes, exactly.
Yes, because you'll still need your electricians, your maintenance, your storeman, all
that
sort of stuff. You know, it's still going to be needed.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a big problem. Is Argyll and Bute Council, are they in the pockets of the nuclear? Is that too much to say? Or are they kind of lukewarm?
I wouldn't be able to say. I don't know for sure. But There are anti-nuclear within it, but it's a Tory-run council just now.
Oh, is it? All right. So we can, that says a lot. So you're up against it there. I take it you get no change from them.
Sorry?
You'll get no change from them.
No.
Now, You were at the Indie March a couple of weeks ago, and I got talking. I can't remember who. I think it was Anne Marie. I got talking to.
It was Anne Marie. Yeah.
And she was telling me about the dangers of nuclear and what she was trying to put across to people who were coming in. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, we've got kind of two main threads on this one. Mm-hmm. So we've got obviously the transportation of the materials into Coolport anyway.
Yes.
And you know, if anybody wants to find out any more information, NukeWatch did a report called Unready Scotland, and the fact that they are transporting all these weapons up from down south, so what, about 400, 500 miles through normal public roads. Although the MOD will take responsibility for the actual risk assessment in transferring it, the local authorities have the responsibility to make sure the public are safe if something happens. So we do have that risk coming in, the fact that these materials are being moved on public roads. And in fact, I think it was just last Thursday I actually got diverted on my way home from work because there was a convoy coming through. So, I mean, you know, it's during the day, you know, we've all seen the videos.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. And the kind of second thread is the fact that the submarines themselves, you know, they're nuclear powered. It's a nuclear reactor that's on there. As part of their operation, it discharges into the gale loch.
Yes, this is what I'm interested in.
Yes, yes. So there is a document out there, a SEPA document from about 5 years ago, maybe.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so they were kind of working there, looking at the radiation levels and how they can control it a bit better, because the base is essentially the Crown Estate. SEPA can't totally legislate; they can monitor roundabout.
Right.
Right. So there's a wee bit of a get out there.
Yes.
But the effluent essentially comes from the reactor within the submarine. And although there is a treatment facility within Faslane, it is there to reduce the radioactivity, not necessarily eliminate, and then it gets discharged into the gale loch. So one of the nucleides in there is tritium.
Tritium, that's right. Yeah.
Tritium, yes. So if anybody Googles that and looks into Dr. Ian Fairley, if they look into some of his work, there's stacks and stacks of information there, but it's not exactly nice stuff. It's a radioactive hydrogen molecule, and it can go essentially wherever there's hydrogen, so that's your water, your body.
Indeed. Frightening.
Yeah. So it gets released through liquid form into the gale loch. It also, and I only found this out last night, it actually gets released in gaseous form from the weapons themselves within Coolport.
Wow.
So although within the SEPA document they did consider the levels to be safe, it is introducing more tritium into the environment. So, you know, where we're looking at the kind of dangers of having nuclear weapons on our doorstep, it's, if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have this effluent going in. We wouldn't have the releases to atmosphere.
Now, I heard, I don't know if I picked this up right, but apparently a dog was on the beach down by one of these places and it got its paws burnt because of this tritium. And they were wondering, the poor dog was in absolute agony. And apparently it was down to this tritium getting on the paws and burning his paws. That was Anne Marie was telling me that wee story way back.
Right, right. I don't actually recall that one, but I know that certainly, this would be a number of years ago. Mm-hmm. There were a few dogs, one of which was our own family dog, and they were all walked in the same area. This would probably be about the 80s or the 90s, and developed leukemia.
The dogs
did. Anybody's a vet.
Yeah.
Yes, and if anybody's a vet out there, they probably know that leukemia is quite rare in dogs. So there was definitely, there's something, you know, there was about three or four dogs in the area that all developed leukemia.
And you can link that straight back to the nuclear...
It would be very tenuous to try to link it all the way back, and I'm sure it would all get very distorted, but it's too much of a coincidence.
too much of a coincidence. Absolutely. Now, what are you going to be doing in the up in months and coming? You're still going around the festivals? We are.
Yes, we'll be there with our tent. We'll be down in Gala Shields on the 1st of June.
All right, 1st of June.
Up to Oban. So I think certainly within Argyll and Bute, it's quite important that we at least do the Oban and the Campbellton ones.
Absolutely.
We see it as, in order to get rid of nuclear weapons from Scotland, from Scottish waters and from the hillside, we have to get independence. You know, it might just be very kind of parochial that we get rid of them from our doorstep. They will still exist. But independence is our only route that we can see as the quickest and the easiest to get rid of them.
Yeah, that's because the SNP are against, totally against nuclear power and nuclear weapons. They've said that at the conference, haven't they? They've been very vocal about that. So you picked a piece of music for us to play for you. Can you remind us what that was?
No, I can't remember what it was.
Well, I'll tell you. It was Everything But the Girl.
Everything But the Girl.
And it's a song called The Night I Heard Caruso Sing. I'm going to turn this off. This is not it. We'll just put
it
a wee bit.
From the collective team of three, and
That was the collection. Yeah, we've got a bit of music on just now, but that's not it. So I'm going to play Everything But the Girl just for you. And I know you're a busy woman, but thanks very much for coming on Indie Live. And what I'll do is I'll play this Everything But the Girl, The Night I Heard Caruso Sing. And do you know this? You've introduced me to an amazing song. I never realised it was so powerful.
Good. I know. I listened to it again just a couple of days ago, it was very interesting.
Absolutely. Ilse, you've been a pleasure to have on. Thank you very much. And we'll play out with Everything But the Girl. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Cheers, Norrie.
Cheers, Elsa. Bye now.
Right, bye.
Here we go.
IndieLive.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
IndieLive.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
IndieLive.radio.
Is right. We have in the studio Emma. Just check your mic, Emma. Just speak in to say 11:12.
11:12.
Perfect. We can hear you. We've got you in from CND Scotland. Do you want to tell us a wee bit about CND Scotland and what you're up to these days?
So my name's Emma Coburn, as introduced. I'm campaign worker at Scottish Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. We work to abolish nuclear weapons in Scotland, and also work with our partners at CND UK for a UK-wide abolition of Trident, and we're also part of the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons.
Right. So let's get something from the start. You're not a branch office of CND, you're an autonomous group yourself.
So we work autonomously in Scotland. We are part of the CND UK, as in we're partners with them, but not a branch in the way that Scottish CND has branches in Aberdeen and District, Edinburgh, Glasgow.
Right. And what's the membership now? Have you got any figures to hand? Is it quite healthy, do you think, or could you always do more?
So post-referendum, obviously we had a real jump in membership, which was fantastic. A lot of people became awake to the issue of nuclear weapons in Scotland. A lot of people got more involved politically. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, it's an annual membership. Membership numbers have decreased. We're currently sitting at about 3,000, which I know can definitely be increased. Memberships start from just 10 pence a year, so it's not an awful lot of money at all compared to the amount of work that we do.
Indeed. And you're self-funded as well, aren't you?
Yeah, so we rely mostly on our membership funds and also legacies that our members leave us.
Legacies.
We have, I'm not sure if we're going to talk about it later, but we have Peace Education Scotland, that is our charity arm with the charitable status that has.
We'll try and punt CND Scotland as much as we can. This is what we're all about here. Of course, everybody knows about Trident, but do we really know enough about Trident? Scotland as a whole?
So my sort of experience at Scottish CND is that I was a volunteer for about 5 years before I started working in the office. And through that, I mean, I only heard about the issue of nuclear weapons with
the independence referendum. It was always sort of in my mind, but as I speak to people, especially people my age, I mean, I'm one of the youngest people in the organisation in terms of how we're made up, and people have just, it's the status quo, it's just the norm, people don't think there's anything we can do about it, it's such a massive issue, and in nuclear weapon states it is just regarded as, that's just what we have, there's no way we can change it, this is how it's always been.
Yeah, do you think the media has got, is lacking in this, highlighting what's going on there, or is it just not good enough news for them, I think?
I think it just comes back to what I said, in that unless something very dramatic happens, such as the recent celebration of nuclear weapons at Westminster, it's not worth...
Yeah, we'll have a look at that.
Yeah,
we'll have a look at that. Right, we'll get straight to it, actually. Westminster Abbey had a church service praising nuclear weapons. I would guess the Scottish Church is really opposed to that, because they are opposed to nuclear weapons. They've come out and said that.
Yeah, so that has been a stance of the Church of Scotland for... I don't have the for the longest time. Members of Church of Scotland helped found Scottish CND. It's a very strong stance that Church of Scotland have always taken. And I believe, and don't quote me on this, but most recently, Church of England have also taken a similar stance. And that is something that our friends at Christian CND were really pushing in the opposition to this. They had a fantastic petition. They had so many... I'm not clued up on the sort of structure of the church, but they had a lot of sort of senior figures in the church sign up in opposition to this, and for that to happen in a Christian church, that's a massive issue, and that is why that did gain a little bit of coverage. And with our friends at CND UK, they staged a fantastic protest to this on the day, and from Scottish CND perspective, we were just supporting that and pulling that information out to our members and things like that.
Well, you know, I am a member of the Church of Scotland, and I know fine that a lot of ministers see it as unchristian, this weapon of mass destruction. And all the time we're reminded in churches and beyond the Second World War, the nuclear weapons in Japan. We're talking more than that down the Holy Loch, aren't we? It's scandalous what we don't know. And that's deliberate, I guess. How much of a battle do you find getting your message out there?
I think it's the case that we need more people to be involved so we can reach more people, because I, in all my time of doing this, have yet to meet someone that when I explain the facts and when I talk about how little control Scotland actually has about things that are happening in our country, they almost always support what we're saying, and anyone that comes with the ideas that they are fully supportive of nuclear weapons... By the time you've had 5-10 minutes with them, they either aren't sure about their opinion or are actively against.
Yeah, indeed. It's one of those things that people have always got something much more important, like family or mortgage, to worry about.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's family mortgage that is causing you that worry. It's because of Trident, because it's soaking up all the money that's available. And also it's damaging our health. We're getting, just to let you know, we'll be phoning Navy Not Nukes just after the 12 o'clock news, and they've got some stories to tell about what they've seen down in the Holy Loch. I'm sure you've got the same kind of stories, the dangers around nuclear.
So in terms of how Scotland has been exposed over the last 60 years, just actually this year we launched an exhibition with funding from the Heritage Lottery Fund on 60 years of Scottish CND, titled Scotland, A Piece of History. So with that, what we're doing is we're looking at the peace movement in Scotland, the work that they've done, the way that, in actual fact, Scottish CND has facilitated groups coming together. It's very much a coalition builder, and we wouldn't be as far as we are now without the work of our partner groups such as Trident Ploughshares, Nuke Watch, and all the other groups that are part.
We'll kind of get to that a wee bit later. I also want to talk about Hunterston. And also it's 30 odd years since Chernobyl. You probably wouldn't remember that, but... The legacy still goes on. Even farms up in Scotland, there's still sheep being affected by radiation. But we do know, we're going to go to some music just now. This is one you requested. This is China Girl, David Bowie, playing for Emma. We'll be back after this. That was David Bowie, China Girl, as requested by Emma from Scottish CND, who's sitting opposite me. We're going to be talking a wee bit more about Scottish CND. In particular, Emma, the ICAN, International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. What's that all about?
So ICANN is an organisation made up of peace groups from across the whole world. Scotland has four or five partners, so that's broken up into ICANN in Scotland. We have the Scottish ICANN Roundtable that meets every 3 to 4 months, and what that is it's groups from, for example, Peace and Justice Centre, UN House, Scottish CND, and we come together and we talk about how we can work together to push the idea of ICANN and the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which is what the work that ICANN does. So the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons was a piece of legislation that was discussed in the UN and brought in...
UN?
Yeah, so we're on a UN level at this point.
Wow.
So what that is it's a treaty, it's one of the most sort of progressive treaties, treaties in terms of nuclear disarmament, and it's absolute in its opposition. So what we need for that to come into force is 50 countries to sign and ratify. The signature is the leader of the country signing up to it, and the ratification is when it goes through each state member's parliament and comes into force.
So if there's 50 countries wanted for this UN legislation to be passed, how many have we got so far?
So initially, when the debate was up, there was 122 countries in support of it. The exact figure, last time I looked, it was 22 countries had signed and ratified it, and there's about 70 countries that have signed it. So
halfway.
That's
not bad.
Really fast-moving treaty for the UN level. And I think at the last ICANN in the UK meeting, which was down in York that I attended last month, we were sitting at looking at end of 2020 for that to come into force.
Wow. Good work. This is unseen work that Scottish CND does. I think more people should know about this, definitely. The one thing that I got a bit confused about was your website is www.banthebomb.org.
That's the Scottish CND website. We also help to host nuclearban.scot, which is ICANN in Scotland. That's the website where all the partner organisations come together to talk about global news and the work that we're doing to help support the Treaty and the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons.
Brilliant. 60th anniversary, Atomic Scotland. 60 years there's been a Scotland CND.
That's right.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Well, 61 now. We had a 61st birthday party at the end of March, where we held, as I mentioned earlier, Scotland, a piece of history. So that's an exhibition. It's a timeline. It's a 4 metre long timeline by 2 metres tall, with all of the main events within Scotland and out with... that have moved on to progress.
And that's on your website?
Yeah, so you can get onto that through banthebomb.org. You can go on banthebomb.org/history. You can see an online version of that. Other than that, it is touring around Scotland. We've been all across the Central Belt so far. We're looking to go into the Highlands at the end of the year. If you're based in the Central Belt, the next place you can see it is at Hillhead Library in Glasgow as part of the West End Festival on the 15th of June. We'll be there all day. Forward to that, we'll also be in Arran at the start of June, the Isle of Arran. We'll be part of the World Justice Festival in Edinburgh, and we'll be at Secret Bunker. The whole calendar's up there.
That is amazing.
Getting around.
What we'll do for you, Emma, we will get all these dates and we will put them on the show, and
that's
we'll
fantastic.
Promote them all the time as they come through. This is amazing work. And I think, 60 years, you said?
Yeah.
The thing about... even CND meetings, you do see these, I'll call them, let's see, older people. They must have been the people that start from the 60s. 60 years, yes. So they go way back.
So this is, it sort of brings back to what I was saying, and people my age and people a little bit older, we see nuclear weapons as something that's always been there. There's not really been any massive changes, whereas... the people that I meet in meetings, the people, for example, our vice chairs that have been around since the start, they were there very much when there was Polaris and then moving on to Trident. And so there was a real reason for people to have a lot of anger around it, whereas now, like I said before, it's just the status quo. We've come to accept it. We think it's totally out of our hands. The whole language around nuclear weapons is completely inaccessible. We use words like deterrent. I mean, what does that even mean?
That's something you put down your sinks to stop germs, isn't it? That's
exactly. So I think we talk about it in a little bit. We have the campaign Scotland Not Trident that we're running this year, where what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the language around nuclear weapons and sort of make it more accessible, make the main arguments, link it into things that people...
understand
more. People understand, and the issues that people face day to day, such as housing and jobs and things like that.
one of the things that came out of the 2014 referendum was the comparison of spend to Trident and nuclear in general to actual social housing, social programmes, and it's vast.
Yeah,
and,
outrageous.
And we don't, what do we see for what we get, what we pay? Well, there is there was a survey done not so long ago, you probably won't like this, but most of the people said that they were glad of Trident because it's kept us safe.
Yeah.
How do you combat that narrative?
With that sort of line of communication, that's one that's just been pushed out by proponents of Trident. It is something that like I said before, we tried to break it down into the simplest terms because that's how people can communicate it to others.
Exactly.
That's how our message is spread. We speak to people, they speak to people. Even something as simple as sharing something on social media, something that gets people thinking, and that's sort of where we've been focusing with the Scotland Not Trident campaign. We've been focusing a lot on social media because we know, especially since the referendum, that that is a real important form of communication.
Well, do you know this? My daughter, who is 11, I try to tell her about these things, and as soon as I do, small girl, big brain, sponge brain, she goes, "Dad, that's just terrible. Mm-hmm. How's that allowed to happen?" Mm-hmm. I says, "Well, if I was to tell you all the things you didn't know, you would know about them, and then they would happen without you knowing." Mm. And she says, "That's what happens, Dad. How can we stop that?" And my immediate thought was, "I wonder if are you too political to go into schools?"
So we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have Peace Education Scotland. It started as Scottish CND Education. That was a committee within Scottish CND, but it's now branched out into its own organisation in terms of a charity. We have charitable status with that. And the main reason that we have Peace Education Scotland is to get into schools, to go out there, speak to young people, teach them of, try to change this narrative around it being the status quo, and you know, you're better to contact people when they're younger and communicate
absolutely
with them about that before they grow up and they think they can't do anything about it.
Now, it's a bit controversial, but I take it you don't scare people, you don't frighten them about
Not at all. So we have, at the moment, we have three modules. We have one named Survivor Stories, which we'd aim towards people at the later stages of school who are a bit more aware, and usually we'll put them through the other two modules before that. We're currently creating a module on environment because obviously that's so important to young people. We have the fantastic school strikes that are going on. So we are creating an environment and a module about that, But most of the schools that we get in contact with, they maybe don't have the class time to break it up into taking each of the four modules. So what we've been doing is we've been creating a sort of mega module that takes 2 hours out of the day, but it has been coming across really well, starting with an introduction, going into the dangers, going into the history of it, speaking about pressure groups, all things that are like go in line with what kids are being taught in school.
And do you refer back to Hiroshima and those kind of things?
Yes, so that is what the Survivor Stories module is all about. So we have video testimonies from Hibakusha. We have sort of worksheets going through like the stages of radiation. So it's very much teaching the kids, and we do it from a non-political perspective.
Brilliant. Because I think that's the biggest worry of schools, if it's coming in from a political thing. You know, if you start saying, well, the only way we can get Trident through rid of it is through independence, which is probably true. But you can't really mention that because that's political. Right, lots and lots in there. I'll just put the number again. If you get any message you want to get in touch, 07507 248 856. Nuclear. We know there's a lot of you out there. Have you given up or relinquished your membership to CND? Why? Why have you done that? Is it just because it's like giving blood, I guess, you've done it and you've forgotten all about it? Is now the time to get back into campaign mode? Give us your shouts on that and we'll get back to you. Woof! Right, so what are you up to today?
So I'm here today. I was in the office this morning. We're just launching our new online store. That's another way we sort of raise funds. So we've got a whole load of t-shirts in. We'll be at festivals all summer, so we're organising that.
I seen you at the march and rally at Glasgow Green, and I thought, I'll go over and speak to you. And I couldn't believe the amount of information I got from a 5-minute chat. So then I decided, look, can you come in? And I can't believe after it's even shorter than that, you've given us all this even more information. So thanks very much, Gemma, for coming in. Stick around, because we've got to play some music now. This is something that Mike Fenwick asked when he was on Across the Seat from me on Monday. He asked for Buffy St. Marie, The Big Ones Got Away. I'm going to try and see what this is about. Right, we've got Emma back. Emma, we were just discussing where, how you got to where you are. You're an integral part of Scotland C&D, but I was asking, were your parents C&D? And you said to me something quite remarkable.
Yeah, so we were just having a discussion around that. And yeah, people often ask me that because a lot of people that I meet in Scottish C&D and with other organisations, it's very much, oh, my father was at this protest, my mum was doing that, when in actual fact I come from quite an opposite background. Few members of my close family are involved in the military, are very much pro-Trident,
right.
Sort of not disagree with what I do, they think that I can, but like a lot of sort of military personnel that I've come in contact with, it's sort of like, oh, like you go and do your campaigning, you go and do this, it's not really going to do anything, there's not going to be much change.
So you're not a danger, you're not a threat to anyone.
Yeah, that's sort of how people, you know, just like that whole hippie mentality.
How wrong they are. it's just like, maybe my preconception was you're bound to have parents that wear sandals and a caftan, but it's not the case, is it?
No.
A lot of ordinary people are coming forward, getting more and more interested in these issues. Mm-hmm. One issue that I got really annoyed about and really worried about was the Hunterston, it's nuclear, but it's not nuclear bombs, but nuclear power, uh-huh. So it's nuclear. I'm just wanting to know what your thoughts are, because Hunterston B, my second name's Hunter, and that's my ancestral homeland, and they've got that blooming thing up there. But what, I think it was Dr. Ian, who was it?
Fairley.
He'd done a piece on this, and he realised that the bricks were cracking within the, uh-huh. the terminal. It was due to be decommissioned 2011, mm-hmm. and it's still there with bricks cracking.
Yeah.
How much danger has to happen before we really wake up to this?
Mm-hmm. So as far, from my experience anyway, Scottish C&D, we didn't do an awful lot of work around nuclear power, because obviously we had such a large focus with Faslane just being 30 miles up the road from Glasgow.
Yeah, but, I know, I just landed that on you.
Yeah, but
it does give concerns, yeah. doesn't it?
Definitely. I think this year we've sort of focused more on the issues at Hunterston because, well, first of all, we have a very active Ayrshire C&D branch, that really affects their community.
Indeed.
Also the dangers around that, as you said, it was due to be closed in 2011, but then it had been pushed back, and we got in contact with Dr. Ian Fairley, and at the start of the year, February, March, we held some really interesting discussions in Glasgow and Edinburgh around the dangers of nuclear power and specifically what it is that's happening mm-hmm. at Hunterston. So myself, I went in with hardly any knowledge of how nuclear power works, how the power plants work, and came away with a very easy sort of breakdown of how they work. You can see a sort of summary of that on our website if anyone's mm-hmm. interested.
Indeed. What gets me, Emma, is that we're pushing ahead with renewable power up mm-hmm. the east coast of Scotland, and it's rumoured, I don't know if the facts are this for sure, but we can really get all our energy needs from non-nuclear.
Uh-huh.
Like, renewable energy.
Well, yeah.
Why are we still dabbling in this ancient system?
Well, that's exactly it, especially when you see the fears. I mean, Dr. Ian Fairley, he has produced multiple papers on what could happen at Hunterston and the dangers that would pose, especially to the central belt of Scotland and uh-huh. further. EDF are obviously still pushing to reopen. I think they set the initial restart date end of April, pushed mm-hmm. it back to end of May. The Office for Nuclear Regulation, they will not let them reopen unless they deem it safe. But from the work that Dr. Ian Fairley did, they monitored about 10% uh-huh. of the 3,000 graphite barrels that are in there.
Right.
And from that, I can't remember the number, I think something like 40% of them had the major cracking. So if you scale that up to 100% of it, you're looking at a massive, massive issue there.
Well, Hunterston B cracks in the graphite bricks was pretty serious. Even more serious was that 28% of the fuel channels had been inspected by cameras, because that's mm-hmm. the only way you safely can do it.
Uh-huh.
What about the rest? We don't know.
Exactly. The discussion that...
It could be in excess of about 1,000 bricks uh-huh. cracked.
I think from what I remember, there are 3,000 graphite barrels, and mm-hmm. potentially 1,200 of those may have severe cracks in them.
Indeed.
But with the severe radiation that's going on in there, they can't put the cameras into every section, and also that means they need to close that area for working. So
absolutely.
That's a very simple version of the work that
Dr. Ian Frey Dunn.
And the more you speak to people, the more frightened they get. Do you think it's suddenly coming upon them that, oh, wow. Because I can tell you one thing. My wife is she's not well with cancer, and we go to the Beatson Clinic in Glasgow.
Uh-huh. Sorry to hear that.
And but the thing is, a lot of people, even the doctors saying, leukaemia, the clusters are coming from Ayrshire in certain parts of Scotland where nuclear isn't that far away.
Mm-hmm.
If that isn't a wake-up call to people, I don't know what is.
Well, that's exactly it. And I think in terms of, I mean, I was just discussing it with yourself, the new HBO show of Chernobyl, that has really sort of reminded people about the fears around nuclear power. And obviously the situation aren't similar, but people need to be aware that actually nuclear power isn't as safe as people make it out to be. And I think, as you said, 30 years ago, that's before I was born, it's before a lot of the young people that are around today were born. So it's sort of not fresh in our minds, but in actual fact, there's still remnants of that in Scotland and across Europe.
Absolutely. And you know what makes it even more galling? There's MPs who come out of, who lose their seats, join up with the nuclear boards and get paid positions, and they go on radio and they tell how good nuclear is and we need a mixed balance of energies. No, we don't.
Yeah.
We're not that daft, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the young people coming through, I mean, when you've got a daughter 11 years old, you do not want her to grow up in a country where nuclear is dominant. We've had it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
If that thing goes up, the whole of Glasgow's up.
Oh,
you know, but how do you, the argument that comes back to me from that is, well, nothing's happened in 60-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
But wait a minute here. There's leukaemia clusters. There's we can't... I go subaqua sometimes. Can't go down the Holy Loch. A beautiful place in Scotland.
Yeah.
You cannot use that as a leisure facility. Boats patrolling it, make sure you don't get down there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Navy for Navy Against Nukes might tell us the health implications that they've found. And even, you know... Even if we could put warning signs up to tell people not to go there because it's nuclear, they won't even let us do that.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think that's a lot of the work that Faslane Peace Camp's obviously done over the last 30 years and things about in that area.
Absolutely. Right, we're going to go to some music now. Kev's instructed me there's plenty of messages coming through, so we'll have a look at them. But this is Charlie Puth. He's telling us to Marvin Gaye and Get It On or something. Let's see. And it's got a point now. Marvin Gaye, Get It On, Charlie Puth. We've got the mics on, Emma, so you're coming out loud and clear. Hope you enjoyed that wee bit of music. Meghan Trainor was on that too. Right, what's coming up in the up-and-coming future for Scotland CND? Or is it CND Scotland?
Scottish CND.
Scottish CND.
Yeah.
Got it wrong twice. Well, no, I got banthebomb.org wrong as well, but, and I wasn't wrong. This is your chance to promote Scottish CND.
So in terms of the events that come up, you can obviously find them always on our website, which is banthebomb.org, definitely. So there, today, between 4 and 5, there is the weekly vigil at Faslane, which is organised by Helensburgh CND, Faslane Peace Camp and Trident Ploughshares. That's on every single week. We need to be there every single week to speak to the people that are leaving the base. That's been ongoing for decades now.
60-odd years, I think.
Yeah.
It has. It's been there since inception. Yeah.
And we wouldn't be able to do that without the help of those groups.
No, you wouldn't.
We also have, as I mentioned before, we've got Scotland, A Piece of History, that will be touring around Scotland. If you're interested in taking it on, it is a 4-metre by 2-metre timeline, and we can help transport it to your area. If you think there's a school, public library, local area that would benefit from it, we can help you facilitate that. We also have our monthly street stall and peace vigil. So that's at the Donald Dewar statue in Glasgow.
Oh, right,
we do
the
that
steps.
On the fourth Thursday of every month. We have stall between 3:30.
I'm team my door there actually.
Yeah, so when we just do the outreach for that, this month we'll be looking at the Jobs Not Trident campaign, where we'll be talking about our work with the SDUC and things like that. And then after that, there is a peace vigil organised by the Scottish Peace Network, which we participate in also. Following that, we have Scotland, A Piece of History, going to the Saul Courts Library. I believe that will be on the 29th of May.
You've got a full calendar.
Yeah. And then we're going to Arran with the exhibition, and then Edinburgh CND are going to be at the Meadows Festival, following us with, at Eden Festival with our stall to reach young people, families and people that attend them.
And it's just outside the Scottish Parliament as well.
Yeah.
So we might be able to attract some politicians over.
Well, that's
the plan, I'm sure.
That's the plan.
Just when you mentioned there, the other thing that comes up from certain Labour politicians is the jobs that nuclear brings. There's so many. Can you dispel that or prove it or disprove it?
I was lucky enough to get along to the SDUC Congress where we had a stall this year. Our chair, Arthur West, he had put forward motion around defence diversification, which SDUC welcomed a few years ago, I think now, but this was a sort of reaffirming their support for that, to work with the Scottish Government on that. So we released the leaflet and the online sort of campaign around the jobs. We sort of dispel the myths around. I think the MOD at the moment are hitting out with 30,000 jobs, when in actual fact, the majority of those are military personnel that can easily be deployed elsewhere.
That's right.
And in terms of that, we look at the Faslane Coolport areas and how that area can be developed for marine tourism. In the case of Scotland, we have a Scottish naval base there for conventional arms and things like that. We have a few reports out on that we worked with the SDUC. We've just had a reprint of them, so if anyone wants any of them, you can get them on our website, Trident Jobs.
I will.
We also connect up with the Jimmy Reid Foundation, who released a report on defence diversification. The Nuclear Education Trust, who are one of our partner organisations, they have a fantastic report out of the same title. All of these reports you can get on our website. They're really worth a look. I've spent the last 6 months reading through all the reports of the last 10 years just to see how the jobs argument has changed and moved forward. And
well, I can tell you, Emma, for this interview, I scanned over the last 2 days your website, and I couldn't get it on, honestly. For an interview, I had to get the salient points. It's just chock full of good stuff. You must visit bandthebomb.org. It's honestly, it's awakening. It really is, especially when they talk about jobs and this diversification from nuclear. We can change things over into not from nuclear to renewable energy easily, and it seems to me that it's it's politicians like to use nuclear to flex their muscles and say to the rest of the world, we've got nukes.
Well, exactly. I think the jobs argument as well, it's something that really hits home with people. So if they're being told, if we don't have nuclear weapons, that's 30,000 jobs, 30,000 people without employment. Obviously, that's something that really goes to the heart. Whereas we're trying to make it really easy to understand that actually that's not the case. They're just framing it differently. This is how many jobs may be lost, but they won't really be lost because of with the use of a defence diversification agency,
we'll be
able to re-employ those people in more what we title socially useful jobs.
I know it's It's like pushing a big boulder up a hill trying to convince people of this.
And that's why we're still here 6 years later.
Indeed, and doing a fantastic job. Well, all I can say now, it's coming up to the 12 o'clock news. We've got 5 minutes left. I'll put in a wee bit of track, but just a big, big thanks, Emma, for coming in.
It's been so
insightful. And you can come back again anytime you want. Whenever you've got a big story to come in, just give us a shout. We'll put you in a seat. We'll get an interview going, and we'll try and get the music you really wanted, not the stuff we put on. I'm going to put on. This is Kenneth. This will take us up to the news. I hope, and we'll just say cheerio to Emma from Scottish ND, and we'll thank her very much. Here we go.
Ended Live Talk Radio.
The people of Scotland.
Right, welcome back to Indie Live Radio and me, Norrie Hunter. Now it's time to get on the phones. We have to phone Ailsa. Ailsa, hope she's listening to get this this phone call. Just get myself together. Scroll down. Where is she? Ailsa, right. Going to phone her. See if we get a reply. See if she's in. Oh, it's ringing.
Hello?
Hello, is that Ailsa?
Yes, it is.
This is Norrie from Indie Live Radio. You're going live here, so I'm not trying to scare you or anything, but we've got you on live to probably over 1,000 listeners. Don't worry about that. Right, first question, Elsa, I know you've not got much time. What's the reason for NNN? That's nuclear, not or Navy, not nuclear.
Navy, not nuclear. So essentially it's round our way, it's quite heavily no voters, okay? So right. Argyll and Bute actually voted about 59% no in the NDREF. Mm-hmm. And one of the major players is the fact that the base is right on our doorstep. So there's a lot of people that were concerned about the likes of the was that about 11,000 jobs or something were going to go?
Yeah, we just talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a kind of big one. So what we're trying to say is, if you get rid of nuclear weapons, if Scotland becomes independent and you get rid of nuclear weapons, you do not need to lose all those jobs, because by turning it into a conventional defence force and having a normal Navy base there, you're still going to need all your support staff. So all those jobs will not go.
So they're transferable jobs, Ailsa?
Sorry?
They're transferable jobs. Exactly.
Yes, because you'll still need your electricians, your maintenance, your storeman, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still going to be needed.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a big problem. Argyll and Bute Council, are they in the pockets of the nuclear? Is that too much to say, or are they kind of lukewarm?
I wouldn't be able to say. I don't know for sure, but There are anti-nuclear within it, but it's a Tory-run council just now.
Oh, is it? All right. That says a lot. So you're up against it there. I take it you get no change from them.
Sorry?
You'll get no change from them.
No.
Now, you were at the Indie March a couple of weeks ago, and I got talking. I can't remember who. I think it was Anne-Marie I got talking to.
It was Anne-Marie, yeah.
And she was telling me about the dangers of nuclear and what she was trying to put across to people who were coming in. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, we've got kind of two main threads on this one. Mm-hmm. So we've got obviously the transportation of the materials into Coolport anyway.
Yes.
And you know, if anybody wants to find out any more information, NukeWatch did a report called Unready Scotland, and the fact that they are transporting all these weapons up from down south, so what, about 400, 500 miles through normal public roads. Although the MOD will take responsibility for the actual risk assessment in transferring it, the local authorities have the responsibility to make sure the public is safe if something happens. So we do have that risk coming in, the fact that these materials are being moved on public roads. And in fact, I think it was just last Thursday, I actually got diverted on my way home from work because there was a convoy coming through. So, I mean, you know, it's during the day, you know, we've all seen the videos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the kind of second thread is the fact that the submarines themselves, you know, they're nuclear powered. It's a nuclear reactor that's on there. As part of their operation, it discharges into the Gaelloch.
Yes. This is what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yes. So there is a document out there, a SEPA document from about 5 years ago, maybe.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so they were kind of working there, looking at the radiation levels and how they can control it a bit better, because the base is essentially the Crown Estate. SEPA can't totally legislate; they can monitor around about.
Right.
So there's a wee bit of a get out there.
Yes.
But the effluent essentially comes from the reactor within the submarine. And although there is a treatment facility within Faslane, it is there to reduce the radioactivity, not necessarily eliminate, and then it gets discharged into the Gaelloch. So one of the nucleides in there is tritium.
Tritium, that's right. Yeah.
Tritium, yes. So if anybody Googles that and looks into Dr. Ian Fairley, if they look into some of his work, there's stacks and stacks of information there, but it's not exactly nice stuff. It's a radioactive hydrogen molecule, and it can go essentially wherever there's hydrogen. So that's your water, your body.
Indeed. Frightening. Yeah.
So it gets released through liquid form into the Gale Loch. It also, and I only found this out last night, it actually gets released in gaseous form from the weapons themselves within Coolport.
Wow.
So although within the CEPA document they did consider the levels to be safe, it is still introducing more tritium into the environment. So, you know, where we're looking at the kind of dangers of having nuclear weapons on our doorstep, it's if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have this effluent going in, we wouldn't have the releases to atmosphere.
Now, I heard, I don't know if I picked this up right, but apparently a dog was on the beach down by one of these places and it got its paws burnt because of this tritium. And they were wondering, the poor dog was in absolute agony. And apparently it was down to this tritium getting on the paws and burning his paws. That was Anne-Marie was telling me that wee story way back.
I don't actually recall that one, but I know that certainly, this would be a number of years ago, there were a few dogs, one of which was our own family dog, and they were all locked in the same area. This would probably be about the 80s or the 90s, and developed leukemia.
The dogs did.
If anybody's a vet.
Yeah.
Yes, and if anybody's a vet out there, they probably know that leukemia is quite rare in dogs. So there was definitely, there's something, you know, there was about three or four dogs in the area that all developed leukemia.
And you can link that straight back to the nuclear...
It would be very tenuous to try to link it all the way back, and I'm sure it would all get very distorted, but it's too much of a coincidence.
Too much of a coincidence, absolutely. Now... What are you going to be doing in the months and coming? You're still going around the festivals? We are.
Yes, we'll be there with our tent. We'll be down in Gala Shields on the 1st of June.
All right, 1st of June.
Up to Oban. So I think certainly within our Gael and Bute, it's quite important that we at least do the Oban and the Campbellton ones.
Absolutely.
We see it as in order to get rid of nuclear weapons from Scotland, from Scottish waters and from the hillside, we have to get independence. You know, it might just be very kind of parochial that we get rid of them from our doorstep, they will still exist, but independence is our only route that we can see as the quickest and the easiest to get rid of them.
Yeah, that's because the SNP are against, totally against nuclear power and nuclear weapons. They've said that at the conference, haven't they? They've been very vocal about that. So you picked a piece of music for us to play for you. Can you remind us what that was?
No, I can't remember what it was.
Well, I'll tell you, it was
Everything But the Girl. Yes.
And it's a song called The Night I Heard Caruso Sing. I'm going to turn this off. This is not it. We'll just put a wee bit.
From the collective team of three, and
Yeah, we've got a bit of music on just now, but that's not it. So I'm going to play Everything But the Girl just for you. And I know you're a busy woman, but thanks very much for coming on Indie Live. And what I'll do is I'll play this Everything But the Girl, The Night I Heard Caruso Sing. And do you know this? You've introduced me to an amazing song. I never realised it was so powerful.
Good. I know. I listened to it again just a couple of days ago, so it was very interesting.
Absolutely. Ilse, you've been a pleasure to have on. Thank you very much. And we'll play out with Everything But the Girl. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Cheers, Nori.
Cheers, Ilse. Bye now.
Right, bye.
Here we go.
IndieLive.radio. The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
IndieLive.radio.
This is right. We have in the studio Emma. Just check your mic, Emma. Just speak in to say 11:12. Perfect. We can hear you. Right. We've got you in from CND Scotland. Do you want to tell us a wee bit about CND Scotland and what you're up to these days?
So my name is Emma Coburn, as introduced. I'm a campaign worker at Scottish Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. We work to abolish nuclear weapons in Scotland and also work with our partners at CND UK for a UK-wide abolition of Trident. And we're also part of the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons.
Right. So let's get something from the start. You're not a branch office of CND. You're an autonomous group yourself.
Yeah, uh-huh. So we work autonomously in Scotland. We are part of the CND UK, as in we're partners with them, but not a branch in the way that Scottish CND has branches in Aberdeen and District, gotcha. Edinburgh, Glasgow.
Right. And what's the membership now? Have you got any figures to hand? Is it quite healthy, do you think, or could you always do more?
So post-referendum, obviously we had a real jump in membership, which was fantastic. Mm. A lot of people became awake to the issue of nuclear weapons in Scotland. Mm. A lot of people got more involved politically. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, as an annual membership, membership numbers have decreased. We're currently sitting at about 3,000, which I know can definitely be increased. Memberships start from just 10 pence a year, so it's not an awful lot of money at all compared to the amount of work that we do.
Indeed. And you're self-funded as well, aren't you?
Yeah, so we rely mostly on our membership funds and also legacies that our members leave us.
Legacies.
We have, I'm not sure if we're going to talk about it later, but we have Peace Education Scotland, that is our charity arm with the charitable status that has.
We'll try and punt CND Scotland as much as we can. This is what we're all about here. Right, of course, everybody knows about Trident, but do we really know enough about Trident? Scotland as a whole?
So my sort of experience at Scottish CND is that I was a volunteer for about 5 years before I started working in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, I mean, I only heard about the issue of nuclear weapons with the independence referendum. It was always sort of in my mind, but as I speak to people, especially people my age, I mean, I'm one of the youngest people in the organisation in terms of how we're made up. Uh-huh. And people have just, it's the status quo, it's just the norm. People don't think there's anything we can do about it. It's such a massive issue. And in nuclear weapon states, it is just regarded as, that's just what we have, there's no way we can change it, this is how it's always been.
Yeah, do you think the media has got up, is lacking in this, highlighting what's going on there, or is it just not good enough news for them, I think?
I think it just comes back to what I said, in that unless something very dramatic happens, such as the recent celebration of nuclear weapons at Westminster, it's not worth...
Yeah, we'll have a look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have a look at that. Right, we'll get straight to it, actually. Westminster Abbey had a church service praising nuclear weapons. I would guess the Scottish Church is really opposed to that, because they are opposed to nuclear weapons. They've come out and said that.
Yeah, so that has been a stance of the Church of Scotland for... I don't have the
head,
but for the longest time. Members of Church of Scotland helped found Scottish CND. It's a very strong stance that Church of Scotland have always taken. And I believe, and don't quote me on this, but most recently, Church of England have also taken a similar stance. And that is something that our friends at Christian CND were really pushing in the opposition to this. They had a fantastic petition. They had so many... not clued up on the sort of structure of the church, but they had a lot of sort of senior figures in the church sign up in opposition to this, and for that to happen in a Christian church, that's a massive issue, and that is why that did gain a little bit of coverage. And with our friends at CND UK, they staged a fantastic protest to this on the day. And from Scottish CND perspective, we were just supporting that and pulling that information out to our members and things like that.
You know, I am a member of the Church of Scotland, and I know fine that a lot of ministers see it as unchristian, this weapon of mass destruction. And all the time we're reminded in churches and beyond the Second World War, the nuclear weapons in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking more than that down the Holy Loch, aren't we?
Uh-huh.
It's scandalous what we don't know.
Yeah.
And that's deliberate, I guess. How much of a battle do you find getting your message out there?
I think it's the case that we need more people to be involved so we can reach more people, because I, in all my time of doing this, have yet to meet someone that when I explain the facts and when I talk about how little control Scotland actually has about things that are happening in our country, they almost always support what we're saying, and anyone that comes with the ideas that they are fully supportive of nuclear weapons, by the time you've had 5-10 minutes with them, they either
aren't sure about their opinion or are actively against.
Yeah, indeed. It's one of those things that people have always got something much more important, like family or mortgage, to worry about.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's family mortgage that is causing you that worry. It's because of Trident, because it's soaking up all the money that's available. And also, it's damaging our health. We're getting, just to let you know, we'll be phoning Navy Not Nukes just after the 12 o'clock news. And they've got some stories to tell about what they've seen down in the Holy Loch. I'm sure you've got the same kind of stories, the dangers around nuclear.
So in terms of how Scotland has been exposed over the last 60 years, just actually this year we launched an exhibition with funding from the Heritage Lottery Fund on 60 years of Scottish C&D titled Scotland, A Piece of History. So with that, what we're doing is we're looking at the peace movement in Scotland, the work that they've done, the way that in actual fact, Scottish C&D has facilitated groups coming together. It's very much a coalition builder, and we wouldn't be as far as we are now without the work of our partner groups such as Trident Ploughshares, Nuke Watch, and all the other groups that are part.
We'll kind of get to that a wee bit later. Also, I want to talk about Hunterston. And also, it's 30 odd years since Chernobyl. You probably wouldn't remember that, but the legacy still goes on. Even farms up in Scotland, there's still sheep being affected by radiation. But we do know, we're going to go to some music just now. This is one you requested. This is China Girl, David Bowie, playing for Emma. We'll be back after this. That was David Bowie, China Girl, as requested by Emma from Scottish C&D, who's sitting opposite me. We're going to be talking a wee bit more about Scottish C&D. In particular, Emma, the ICAN, International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. What's that all about?
So ICAN is an organisation made up of peace groups from across the whole world. Scotland has four or five partners, so that's broken up into ICAN in Scotland. We have the Scottish ICAN Roundtable that meets every 3 to 4 months, and what that is it's groups from, for example, Peace and Justice Centre, UN House, Scottish C&D, and we come together and we talk about how we can work together to push the idea of ICAN and the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which is what the work that ICAN does. So the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons was a piece of legislation that was discussed in the UN and brought in...
UN...
Yeah, so we're on a UN level at this point.
Wow.
So what that is it's a treaty. It's one of the most sort of progressive treaties, treaties in terms of nuclear disarmament, and it's absolute in its opposition. So what we need for that to come into force is 50 countries to sign and ratify. The signature is the leader of the country signing up to it, and the ratification is when it goes through each state member's parliament and comes into force.
So if there's 50 countries wanted for this UN legislation to be passed, how many have we got so far?
So initially, when the debate was up, there was 122 countries in support of it. The exact figure, last time I looked, it was 22 countries had signed and ratified it, and there's about 70 countries that have signed it. So
halfway.
That's
not
right.
Bad going.
It's a really fast-moving treaty for the UN level. And I think at the last ICAN in the UK meeting, which was down in York that I attended last month, we were sitting at, looking at end of 2020 for that to come into force.
Wow. Good work. This is unseen work that Scottish C&D does. I think more people should know about this, definitely. The one thing that I got a bit confused about was your website is www.banthebomb.org.
That's the Scottish C&D website. We also help to host nuclearban.scot, which is ICAN in Scotland. That's the website where all the partner organisations come together to talk about global news and the work that we're doing to help support the Treaty and the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons.
Brilliant. 60th anniversary. Atomic Scotland, 60 years there's been a Scotland C&D.
That's right.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Well, 61 now. We had a 61st birthday party at the end of March, where we held, as I mentioned earlier, Scotland, A Piece of History. So that's an exhibition. It's a timeline. It's a 4 metre long timeline by 2 metres tall, with all of the main events within Scotland and out with that have moved on to progress.
And that's on your website?
Yeah, so you can get onto that through bandthebomb.org. You can go on bandthebomb.org/history. You can see an online version of that. Other than that, it is touring around Scotland. We've been all across the Central Belt so far. We're looking to go into the Highlands at the end of the year. If you're based in the Central Belt, the next place you can see it is at Hillhead Library in Glasgow as part of the West End Festival on the 15th of June. We'll be there all day. Forward to that, we'll also be in Arran at the start of June, the Isle of Arran.
Wow.
We'll be part of the World Justice Festival in Edinburgh, and we'll be at Secret Bunker. The whole calendar's up there.
That is amazing.
Getting around.
What we'll do for you, Emma, we will get all these dates and we will put them on the show, and we'll promote them all the time as they come through. This is amazing work. And I think, 60 years, you said?
Yeah.
The thing about... Even CND meetings, you do see these, I'll call them, let's see, older people.
Uh-huh.
They must have been the people that start from the 60s, uh-huh. 60 years, yes. So they go way back.
Uh-huh. So this is, it sort of brings back to what I was saying, and people my age and people a little bit older, we see nuclear weapons as something that's always been there. There's not really been any massive changes, whereas... Mm. The people that I meet in meetings, the people, for example, our vice chairs that have been around since the start, they were there very much when there was Polaris and then moving on to Trident. And so there was a real reason for people to have a lot of anger around it. Whereas now, like I said before, it's just the status quo. We've come to accept it. We think it's totally out of our hands. The whole language around nuclear weapons is completely inaccessible. We use words like deterrent. I mean, what does that even mean?
That's something you put down your sinks to stop germs, isn't it? That's
exactly.
It.
So I think we talk about it in a little bit. We have the campaign Scotland Not Trident that we're running this year, where what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the language around nuclear weapons and sort of make it more accessible, make the main arguments, link it into things that people...
understand
more. People understand, and the issues that people face day to day, such as housing and jobs and things like that.
One of the things that came out of the 2014 referendum was the comparison of spend to Trident and nuclear in general to actual social housing, social programmes, and it's vast.
Yeah,
it's
outrageous.
And we don't, what do we see for what we get, what we pay? Well, there is there was a survey done not so long ago, you probably won't like this, but most of the people said that they were glad... Mm-hmm. of Trident because it's kept us safe.
Yeah.
How'd you combat that narrative?
With that sort of line of communication, that's one that's just been pushed out by proponents of Trident. It is something like I said before, we tried to break it down into the simplest terms because that's how people can communicate it to others.
Exactly.
That's how our message is spread. We speak to people, they speak to people. Even something as simple as sharing something on social media, something that gets people thinking, and that's sort of where we've been focusing with the Scotland Not Trident campaign. We've been focusing a lot on social media because we know, especially since the referendum, that is a real important form of communication.
Well, do you know this? My daughter, who is 11, I try to tell her about these things, and as soon as I do, small girl, big brain, sponge brain, she goes, "Dad, that's just terrible. Mm-hmm. How is that allowed to happen?"
Mm-hmm.
I says, "Well, if I was to tell you all the things you didn't know, you would know about them, and then it would happen without you knowing."
Yeah.
And she says, "What happens, Dad? How can we stop that?" And my immediate thought was, I wonder if are you too political to go into schools?
So we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have Peace Education Scotland. It started as Scottish CND Education. That was a committee within Scottish CND, but it's now branched out into its own organisation in terms of a charity. We have charitable status with that. And the main reason that we have Peace Education Scotland is to get into schools, to go out there, speak to young people, teach them try to change this narrative around it being the status quo. And, you know, you're better to contact people when they're younger and communicate
Absolutely.
With them about that before they grow up and they think they can't do anything about it.
Now, it's a bit controversial, but I take it you don't scare people, you don't frighten them about
Not at all. So we have, at the moment, we have three modules. We have one named Survivor Stories, which we aim towards people at the later stages of school who are a bit more aware, and usually we'll put them through the other two modules before that. We're currently creating a module on environment because obviously that's so important to young people.
Indeed.
We have the fantastic school strikes that are going on. So we are creating an environment and a module about that, But most of the schools that we get in contact with, they maybe don't have the class time to break it up into taking each of the four modules. So what we've been doing is we've been creating a sort of mega module that takes 2 hours out of the day. But it has been coming across really well, starting with an introduction, going into the dangers, going into the history of it, speaking about pressure groups, all things that are like go in line with what kids are being taught in school.
And do you refer back to Hiroshima and those kind of things?
Yes, so that is what the Survivor Stories module is all about. So we have video testimonies from Hibakusha, we have sort of worksheets going through like the stages of radiation. So it's very much teaching the kids, and we do it from a non-political perspective.
Brilliant. Because I think that's the biggest worry of schools, if it's coming in from a political thing, you know, and if you start saying, well, the only way we can get Tridents through and rid of it is through independence, which is probably true, but you can't really mention that because that's political. Right, lots and lots in there. I'll just put the number again. If you get any messages you want to get in touch, 07507 248856, nuclear. We know there's a lot of you out there. Have you given up your, or relinquished your membership to CND? Why? Why have you done that? Is it just because it's like giving blood, I guess, you've done it and you've forgotten all about it? Is now the time to get back into campaign mode? Give us your shouts on that and we'll get back to you. Woof! Right, so what are you up to today?
So I'm here today. I was in the office this morning. We're just launching our new online store. That's another way we sort of raise funds. So we've got a whole lot of t-shirts in. We'll be at festivals all summer, so we're organising that.
I seen you at the March and Rally at Glasgow Green, and I thought, I'll go over and speak to you. And I couldn't believe the amount of information I got from a 5-minute chat. So then I decided, look, can you come in? And I can't believe after, it's even shorter than that, you've given us all this even more information. So thanks very much, Emma, for coming in. Stick around, because we've got to play some music now. This is something that Mike Fenwick asked when he was on Across the Seat from me on Monday. He asked for Buffy St. Marie, The Big One's Got Away. I'm going to try and see what this is about. Right, we've got Emma back. Emma, we were just discussing how you got to where you are. You're an integral part of Scotland CND, but I was asking, were your parents CND? And you said to me something quite remarkable.
So we were just having a discussion around that. And people often ask me that, because a lot of people that I meet in Scottish CND and with other organisations, it's very much, oh, my father was at this protest, my mum was doing that, when in actual fact I come from quite an opposite background. Few members of my close family are involved in the military, are very much pro-Trident, sort of not disagree with what I do, they think that I can, but like a lot of sort of military personnel that I've come in contact with, it's sort of like, oh, like you go and do your campaigning, you go and do this, it's not really going to do anything, there's not going to be much change
in it. So you're not a danger, you're not a threat to anyone.
Yeah, that's sort of how people, you know, just like that whole hippie mentality.
How wrong they are. it's just like, maybe my preconception was, you're bound to have parents that wear sandals and a caftan, but it's not the case, is it?
No.
A lot of ordinary people are coming forward, getting more and more interested in these issues. One issue that I got really annoyed about and really worried about was the Hunterston, it's nuclear, but it's not nuclear bombs, but nuclear power, so it's nuclear. I'm just wanting to know what your thoughts are, because Hunterston B, my second name's Hunter, and that's my ancestral homeland, and I've got that blooming thing up there. But what, I think it was Dr. Ian, who was it?
Ian Fairley.
He'd done a piece on this, and he realised that the bricks were cracking within the terminal. It was due to be decommissioned 2011, and it's still there with bricks cracking. How much danger has to happen before we really wake up to this?
From my experience anyway, Scottish CND, we didn't do an awful lot of work around nuclear power, because obviously we had such a large focus with Faslane just being 30 miles up the road from Glasgow.
I just landed that on you.
But it
does give concerns, doesn't it?
Definitely. I think this year we've sort of focused more on the issues at Hunterston because, well, first of all, we have a very active Ayrshire CND branch. That really affects their community.
Indeed.
Also, the dangers around that, as you said, it was due to be closed in 2011, but then it had been pushed back. And we got in contact with Dr. Ian Fairley, and at the start of the year, February, March, we held some really interesting discussions in Glasgow and Edinburgh around the dangers of nuclear power and specifically what it is that's happening mm-hmm. at Hunterston. So myself, I went in with hardly any knowledge of how nuclear power works, how the power plants work, and came away with like a very easy sort of breakdown of how they work. You can see a sort of summary of that on our website if anyone's really mm-hmm. interested.
Indeed. What gets me, Emma, is that we're pushing ahead with renewable power up the east coast of Scotland, and it's rumoured, I don't know if the facts are this for sure, but we can really get all our energy needs from non-nuclear
uh-huh.
like renewable energy.
Well, yeah.
Why are we still dabbling in this ancient system?
Well, that's exactly it, especially when you see the fears. I mean, Dr. Ian Fairley, he has produced multiple papers on what could happen at Hunterston and the dangers that would pose, especially to the central belt of Scotland and uh-huh. further. EDF are obviously still pushing to reopen. I think they set the initial restart date end of April, pushed it back to end of May. The Office for Nuclear Regulation, they will not let them reopen unless they deem it safe. But from the work that Dr. Ian Fairley did, they monitored about 10%
uh-huh.
of the 3,000 graphite barrels that are in there.
Right.
And from that, I can't remember the number, I think something like 40% of them had the major cracking. So if you scale that up to 100% of it, you're looking at a massive, massive issue there.
Well, Hunterston B, cracks in the graphite bricks was pretty serious. Even more serious was that 28%, only 28% of the fuel channels had been inspected by cameras, because that's mm-hmm. the only way safely can do it.
Uh-huh.
What about the rest? We don't know.
Exactly. The discussion that...
It could be in excess of about 1,000 bricks uh-huh. cracked.
I think from what I remember, there are 3,000 graphite barrels and mm-hmm. potentially 1,200 of those may have severe cracks in them.
Indeed.
But with the severe radiation that's going on in there, they can't put the cameras into every section, and also that means they need to close that area for working. So
absolutely.
That's a very simple version of the work that Dr. Ian Fairley had done.
And the more you speak to people, the more frightened to get. Do you think it's suddenly coming upon them that, oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
Because I can tell you one thing. My wife is, she's not well with cancer, and we go to the Beatson Clinic in Glasgow.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry to hear that.
But the thing is, a lot of people, even the doctors saying, leukaemia, the clusters are coming from Ayrshire in certain parts of Scotland where mm-hmm. nuclear isn't that far away.
Mm-hmm.
If that isn't a wake-up call to people, I don't know what is.
Well, that's exactly it. And I think in terms of... I mean, I was just discussing it with yourself. The new HBO show of Chernobyl, that has really sort of reminded people about the fears around nuclear power. And obviously the situation aren't similar, but people need to be aware that actually nuclear power isn't as safe as people make it out to be. And I think, as you said, 30 years ago, that's before I was born, it's before a lot of the young people that are around today were born. So it's sort of not fresh in our minds, but in actual fact, there's still remnants of that in Scotland and mm-hmm. across Europe.
Absolutely. And you know what makes it even more galling? There's MPs who come out of, who lose their seats, join up with the nuclear boards mm-hmm. and get paid positions, and they go on radio and they tell how good nuclear is and we need a mixed balance mm-hmm. of energies. No, we don't.
Yeah.
We're not that daft, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the young people coming through, I mean, when you've got a daughter 11 years old, you do not want her to grow up in a country mm-hmm. where nuclear is dominant. We've had it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
If that thing goes up, the whole of Glasgow goes up.
Well,
you know, but how do you, the argument that comes back to me from that is, well, nothing's happened in 60-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
But wait a minute here. There's leukaemia clusters. There's we can't... I go subaqua sometimes. Can't go down the Holy Loch. A beautiful place in Scotland.
Yeah.
You cannot use that as a leisure facility. Boats patrolling it, making sure you don't get down there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Navy Against Nukes might tell us the health implications that they've found. And even, you know... Even if we could put warning signs up to tell people not to go there because it's nuclear, they won't even let us do that.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think that's a lot of the work that Faslane Peace Camp's obviously done over the last 30
Indeed.
Years and things about in that area.
Absolutely. Right, we're going to go to some music now. Kev's instructed me there's plenty of messages coming through, so we'll have a look at them. But this is Charlie Puth. He's telling us to Marvin Gaye and Get It On or something. Let's see. And it's got a point now. Marvin Gaye, Get It On, Charlie Puth. We've got the mics on, Emma, so you're coming out loud and clear. Hope you enjoyed that wee bit of music. Meghan Trainor was on that too. Right, what's coming up in the up-and-coming future for Scotland C&D? Or is it C&D Scotland? What? How'd you?
Scottish C&D.
Scottish C&D. Yeah. Got it wrong twice. Well, no, I got banthebomb.org wrong as well, but, and I wasn't wrong. Right, this is your chance to promote Scottish C&D.
So in terms of the events that come up, you can obviously find them always on our website, which is banthebomb.org, definitely. So there, today, between 4 and 5, there is the weekly vigil at Faslane, which is organised by Helensburgh CND, Faslane Peace Camp and Trident Ploughshares. That's on every single week. We need to be there every single week to speak to the people that are leaving the base. That's been going ongoing for decades now.
60-odd years, I think. It has, I think it has. It's been there since inception. Yeah.
And we wouldn't be able to do that without the help of those groups.
No, you wouldn't.
We also have, as I mentioned before, we've got Scotland A Piece of History that will be touring around Scotland. If you're interested in taking it on, it is a 4 metre by 2 metre timeline and we can help transport it to your area. If you think there's a school, public library, local area that would benefit from it, we can help you facilitate that. We also have our monthly street stall and peace vigil.
Where's that?
So that's at the Donald Dhuir statue in Glasgow.
Oh, right,
we do
the
that
steps.
On the fourth Thursday of every month. We have a street stall between 3:30.
Oh, team Adore there actually.
Yeah, so when we just do the outreach for that, this month we'll be looking at the Jobs Not Trident campaign, where we'll be talking about our work with the SDUC and things like that. And then after that there is a peace vigil organised by the Scottish Peace Network, which we participate in also. Following that, we have Scotland A Piece of History going to the Saulcourts Library. I believe that will be on the 29th of May.
You've got a full calendar.
Yeah, and then we're going to Arran with the exhibition, and then Edinburgh C&D are going to be at the Meadows Festival, following us at Eden Festival with our stall to reach young people, families and people that attend them.
And it's just outside the Scottish Parliament as well.
Yeah.
So you might be able to attract some politicians over.
Well, that's
the plan, I'm sure.
That's the plan.
Just when you mentioned there, the other thing that comes up from certain Labour politicians is the jobs that nuclear brings. There's so many. Can you dispel that or prove it or disprove it?
I was lucky enough to get along to the SDUC Congress where we had a stall this year. Our chair, Arthur West, he had put forward motion around defence diversification, which SDUC welcomed a few years ago, I think now, but this was a sort of reaffirming their support for that, to work with the Scottish Government on that. So we released the leaflet and the online sort of campaign around the jobs. We sort of dispel the myths around. I think the MOD at the moment are hitting out with 30,000 jobs, when in actual fact, the majority of those are military personnel that can easily be deployed elsewhere.
That's right.
And in terms of that, we look at the Faslane Coolport areas and how that area can be developed for marine tourism. In the case of an independent Scotland, we have a Scottish naval base there for conventional arms and things like that. We have a few reports out on that we worked with the SDUC. We've just had a reprint of them, so if anyone wants any of them, you can get them on our website, Trident Not Jobs.
I will.
We also connect up with the Jimmy Reid Foundation, who released a report on defence diversification. The Nuclear Education Trust, who are one of our partner organisations, they have a fantastic report out of the same title. All of these reports you can get on our website. They're really worth a look. I've spent the last 6 months reading through all the reports of the last 10 years just to see how the jobs argument has changed and moved forward. And
well, I can tell you, Emma, for this interview I scanned over the last 2 days your website and I couldn't get it on, honestly. For an interview I had to get the salient points. It's just chock full of good stuff. You must visit banthebomb.org. It's honestly, it's awakening. It really is, especially when they talk about jobs and this diversification from nuclear. We can change things over into not from nuclear to renewable energy easily, and it seems to me that it's I don't know, it's politicians like to use nuclear to flex their muscles and say to the rest of the world, we've got nukes.
Well, exactly. I think the jobs argument as well, it's something that really hits home with people. So if they're being told, if we don't have nuclear weapons, that's 30,000 jobs, 30,000 people without employment, obviously that's something that really like goes to the heart, whereas that's, we're trying to make it really easy to understand that actually that's not the case, they're just framing it differently. This is how many jobs may be lost, but they won't really be lost because of, with the use of a defence diversification agency,
that's
we'll be able to re-employ those people in more what we title socially useful jobs.
I know, it's like pushing a big boulder up a hill trying to convince people of this.
And that's why we're still here 60 years later.
Indeed, and doing a fantastic job. Well, all I can say now, it's coming up to the 12 o'clock news, we've got 5 minutes left, I'll put in a wee bit of track, but just a big, big thanks, Emma, for coming in.
It's been so insightful.
Oh no, and you can come back again anytime you want. Whenever you've got a big story to come in, just give us a shout, we'll put you in a seat, we'll get an interview going, and we'll try and get the music you really wanted, not the stuff we put on. I'm going to put on, this is Kenneth, this will take us up to the news, I hope, and we'll just say cheerio to Emma from Scottish ND, and we thank her very much. Here we go.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
Right, welcome back to Indie Live Radio and me, Nori Hunter. Now it's time to get on the phones. We have to phone Ailsa. Ailsa, hope she's listening to get this this phone call. Just get myself together. Scroll down. Where is she? Ailsa. Right, gonna phone her. See if we get a reply. See if she's in. Oh, it's ringing.
Hello?
Hello, is that Ailsa?
Yes, it is. Is that Nori?
This is Nori from Indie Live Radio. You're going live, Ailsa. I'm not trying to scare you or anything, but we've got you on live to probably over 1,000 listeners. Don't worry about that. Right, first question, Ailsa. I know you've not got much time. What's the reason for NNN? That's nuclear, not... or Navy, not nuclear.
Navy, not nuclear. So essentially it's round our way, it's quite heavily no voters, okay? So Argyll and Bute actually voted about 59% no in the Indy Ref.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the major players is the fact that the base is right on our doorstep. So there's a lot of people that were concerned about the likes of the was that about 11,000 jobs or something were going to go?
We just talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a kind of big one. So what we're trying to say is, if you get rid of nuclear weapons, if Scotland becomes independent and you get rid of nuclear weapons, you do not need to lose all those jobs, because by turning it into a conventional defence force and having a normal Navy base there, you're still going to need all your support staff. So all those jobs will not go.
So they're transferable jobs, Ailsa?
Sorry?
They're transferable jobs.
Exactly. Yes, because you'll still need your electricians, your maintenance, your storeman, all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
You know, it's still going to be needed.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a big problem. Is Argyll and Bute Council, are they in the pockets of the nuclear? is that too much to say, or are they kind of lukewarm?
I wouldn't be able to say. I don't know for sure, but There are anti-nuclear within it, but it's a Tory-run council just now.
Oh, is it? All right. That says a lot. So you're up against it there. I take it you get no change from them.
Sorry?
You'll get no change from them.
No.
Now, you were at the Indie March a couple of weeks ago, and I got talking. I can't remember who. I think it was Anne-Marie I got talking to.
It was Anne-Marie, yeah.
And she was telling me about the dangers of nuclear and what she was trying to put across to people who were coming in. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, we've got kind of two main threads on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got obviously the transportation of the materials into Coolport anyway.
Yes.
And you know, if anybody wants to find out any more information, NukeWatch did a report called Unready Scotland, and the fact that they are transporting all these weapons up from down south, so what, about 400, 500 miles through normal public roads. Although the MOD, they take responsibility for the actual risk assessment and transferring it, the local authorities have the responsibility to make sure the public are safe if something happens. So we do have that risk coming in, the fact that these materials are being moved on public roads. And in fact, I think it was just last Thursday, I actually got diverted on my way home from work because there was a convoy coming through. So, I mean, you know, it's during the day, you know, we've all seen the videos. And the kind of second thread is the fact that the submarines themselves, you know, they're nuclear powered. It's a nuclear reactor that's on there. As part of their operation, it discharges into the gale loch.
Yes. This is what I'm interested in.
Yes. Yes. So there is a document out there, a SEPA document from about 5 years ago, maybe. And yeah, so they were kind of working there, looking at the radiation levels and how they can control it a bit better, because the base is essentially the Crown Estate. SEPA can't totally legislate; they can monitor roundabout. So there's a wee bit of a get out there. But the effluent essentially comes from the reactor within the submarine. And although there is a treatment facility within Faslane, it is there to reduce the radioactivity, not necessarily eliminate, and then it gets discharged into the gale loch. So one of the nucleides in there is tritium. Tritium, yes. So if anybody Googles that and looks into Dr. Ian Fairley, if they look into some of his work, there's stacks and stacks of information there, but it's not exactly nice stuff. It's a radioactive hydrogen molecule, and it can go essentially wherever there's hydrogen, so that's your water, your body.
Indeed. Frightening.
So it gets released through liquid form into the gale loch. It also, and I only found this out last night, it actually gets released in gaseous form from the weapons themselves within Coolport. So although within the SEPA document they did consider the levels to be safe, it is introducing more tritium into the environment. So, you know, where we're looking at the kind of dangers of having nuclear weapons on our doorstep, it's, if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have this effluent going in. We wouldn't have the releases to atmosphere.
Now, I heard, I don't know if I picked this up right, but apparently a dog was on the beach down by one of these places and it got its paws burnt because of this tritium. And they were wondering, the poor dog was in absolute agony. And apparently it was down to this tritium getting on the paws and burning his paws. That was Anne-Marie was telling me that wee story way back.
I don't actually recall that one, but I know that certainly, this would be a number of years ago. There were a few dogs, one of which was our own family dog, and they were all walked in the same area. This would probably be about the 80s or the 90s, and developed leukemia.
The dogs
did. Anybody's a vet.
Yeah.
Yes, and if anybody's a vet out there, they probably know that leukemia is quite rare in dogs. So there was definitely there's something. You know, there was about three or four dogs in the area that all developed leukemia.
And you can link that straight back to the nuclear.
It would be very tenuous to try to link it all the way back, and I'm sure it would all get very distorted. But it's too much of a coincidence.
Too much of a coincidence. Absolutely. Now. What are you going to be doing in the up in months and coming? You're still going round the festivals? We are.
Yes, we'll be there with our tent. We'll be down in Gala Shields on the 1st of June.
Up
to Oban. So I think certainly within our Gaelic Beat, it's quite important that we at least do the Oban and the Campbellton ones.
Absolutely.
We see it as, in order to get rid of nuclear weapons from Scotland, from Scottish waters and from the hillside, we have to get independence. You know, it might just be very kind of parochial that we get rid of them from our doorstep, they will still exist, but independence is our only route that we can see is the quickest and the easiest to get rid of them.
Yeah, that's because the SNP are against, totally against nuclear power and nuclear weapons. They've said that at the conference, haven't they? They've been very vocal about that. So you picked a piece of music for us to play for you. Can you remind us what that was?
No, I can't remember what it was.
Well, I'll tell you. It was Everything But
Everything
the Girl.
Everything But the Girl.
And it's a song called The Night I Heard Caruso Sing. I'm going to turn this off. This is not it. We'll just put a wee bit.
From the collective team of three, and
Yeah, we've got a bit of music on just now, but that's not it. So I'm going to play Everything But the Girl just for you. And I know you're a busy woman, so but thanks very much for coming on Indie Live. And what I'll do is I'll play this Everything But the Girl, The Night I Heard Caruso Sing. And do you know this? You've introduced me to an amazing song. I never realised it was so powerful.
Good. I know. I listened to it again just a couple of days ago, so it was very interesting.
Absolutely. Ilse, you've been a pleasure to have on. Thank you very much. And we'll play out with Everything But the Girl. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Cheers, Norrie.
Cheers, Elsa. Bye now.
Right, bye.
Here we go.
IndieLive.radio. The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
IndieLive.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
IndieLive.radio.